This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. Evening, Dan.
Evening, Tom.
How are you this week?
I'm very well.
Yeah?
I can't lie. Yeah, I'm doing fine. Personally speaking.
Yeah, professionally.
Professionally morose.
Yeah, it is a little bit, isn't it? I think I felt like I've had a real... I mean, I've had a hangover, don't get me wrong, since Saturday. But I really feel like I've had just one of those emotional hangovers that you kind of feel like you've been kicked quite repeatedly. I mean...
Where have you been kicked?
I mean, the bollocks sounds a bit too easy, but in the heart, it's straight into the heart and brain. We were supposed to have Ollie Lister, Tottenham Way regular, but he had to pull out last minute, unfortunately. But so it's an El Clasico, Dan.
El Clasico. Back I wouldn't basics. Have it any other way, just the 80.
Yeah, back to basics, which ironically could have saved us a little bit on Saturday. Let's go straight into it, because... I do find these things a bit cathartic, actually. I mean, this is the second time we've had to do a semi-final loss on this podcast, which, look, other clubs don't even get to the semi-final, you know, twice in a decade, let alone twice in 2 years. And I think it's important to say that as a club, we are a little bit of a meme. We are that kind of... If a club can do something that is negative or, you know... If we can hit a record for the amount of semi-finals lost, which have we? Is that
we already had? We had before.
We had it before.
We had last year.
Okay, so we're extending a record basically. Yeah. If a club can do that, it's Tottenham Hotspur, isn't it? It's that you're good enough to reach a semi-final, but you're not quite good enough to get past a semi-final. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Yeah.
Let's start with the Poch comments, which were probably born of emotion. He looked very, very downtrodden afterwards, and I haven't seen the highlights, but I've seen a few kind of pictures and reaction shots of Poch on the bench, and he looked quite, again, beaten up in a way. It seemed like he may have put a lot into this and thought that this might be it. But his comments post-match were quite open, frank, honest, and perhaps slightly... what's the word? A bit too emotional, if you like, and perhaps taken out of context a little bit. What did he say?
Well, I think there were two things from his post-match press conference. The first one was his whole demeanour and manner seemed a lot more downbeat than usual. The word I used actually was maudlin. It was quite a kind of... Mm-hmm. It was a little bit of a depressed Poch. And normally after these things, he comes in after the Juve defeat, after Chelsea last year, and he will... be fine, and he'll say, yeah, it's a learning experience, and basically we go again. And if I think back to when Spurs lost to Palace in the fifth round 2 years ago at White Hart Lane, when the title push was on against Leicester, and he came in and said all the right things, like we're disappointed, you know, we're gutted, but his body language was positively bouncy. Yeah, it couldn't have been further from that on Saturday. And I've got to say, I think... partly in his words, but mainly in the way he delivered them, it did have an air of kind of, will this ever happen to it, which I've never really seen from Poch before. There's always been that concrete belief that it is going to happen for him at Spurs, and I think time and again, stuff's gone to shit, like the end of the Leicester season, and then he's put it right, and he's got over that hurdle, and he's prove people wrong, and there was a kind of air I just don't know anymore. Why this keeps happening. And then that was obviously reflected in that little phrase he said, which was Tottenham need time with me or another, meaning me or another manager, which he has alluded to a future away from Tottenham before, of course, but it's been when he's been asked, you know, will you manage Real Madrid? And he said, oh, you never know in football, you know, one day, maybe, blah, 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 blah. This was genuinely volunteered by Pochettino himself. And actually, I think it was repeated in his interviews with the BBC and I think BeIN Sports. So it wasn't a kind of one-off slip of the tongue. It wasn't
a stream of consciousness,
No, it wasn't. It felt not, I wouldn't say calculated, but it felt deliberate in that he was saying, look, I genuinely believe this will happen for Spurs, but it might not be under me. And that was quite significant, I think, and fairly seismic coming from Poch. He's always kind of had belief that it will come.
You mentioned Juventus there. Juventus was 2 months ago, and you'd argue perhaps an even more heartbreaking exit, really. I know it's a semi-final and stuff, but I mean, Juventus, we really did have it in our hands for a long, long time. And we did have them on the ropes, and we probably should have won that game. I don't think we can really look at that United game.
I think Juventus was far more of a positive experience overall, because there'd been such massive strides in the Champions League and in the group stage. Spurs had beaten Real Madrid and Dortmund and finished top of every team in the competition in terms of points, and Kane had scored loads of goals, and it really clicked, and it had been such a step forward from last year. I think what was galling about Saturday was it didn't feel like Spurs had come anywhere from this time last year when they lost to Chelsea.
Mm.
It didn't feel like there'd been a step forward in beating big teams when it really matters on that stage. And so I think it was much harder for Pochettino to paint it as a positive. I think after Juve it was very much, this is a massive lesson, we're playing a team that's had two Champions League finals in the last 3 years, we're playing a team that wins the Serie A every single year. With Man U, this is a team Spurs beat in January fairly comfortably, and I think,
but who are 6 points ahead and yeah, but, just, you know, beating the champion.
Despite the position of the table, I think, you know, most people would agree that Spurs have had as good a season, yes, not in terms of points, but if you factor in kind of the lack of home games and the type of football Tottenham play, you know, the coherent attacking versus the Mourinho type of football, which admittedly has really delivered results in this year, especially, I think it's beaten City, Liverpool, Tottenham and Chelsea now. But, you know, nonetheless, I think it was much more of an even contest than the Juve contest on paper. And that's why it was so much harder, I think, for Pochettino to come out and say, you know, don't worry, this is another step in the right direction, because it really wasn't.
Do you think, how much of it, to flip it, how much do you think he's going to be there next season? I think when dust settles on stuff like this, I think he's going to be here at Spurs next season.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think he's got a doubt in his mind either. So how much of it do you think is perhaps a bit of a message to Levy? Because that's the way that some people have spun it so far.
I think it's one way of looking at it, definitely. I think Pochettino probably knows that the club is getting to a crossroads, and I don't think that's dramatic, and I think it's true. I think if you look at the position Spurs are in now, and the summer ahead, where probably Alvaro is going to go, probably Rose is going to go, looks like Dembele is going to go as well, looks like he's made his mind up. So you've got three players there who might fetch, you know, 100 million, 110 million between them. Spurs have to then replace them with similar quality, or the squad goes backwards. And then on top of that, they need to improve the squad in order to take this next step. You
know, Pochettino and on top wants of that, to win, needs to do it early in the summer, which is something else that Pochettino has said as well.
Exactly, and it's such
in a, World Cup year,
it's such a big summer ahead. Yeah. And, you know, there's a slight danger that you've, partly through bad luck, but partly through economic factors and other factors, Pochettino's kind of taken Spurs as far as he can with his current means. And I think he maybe realises that it might not happen unless something changes. And he has said many times that everything's going to change when Spurs get into the new stadium. He said that. So I think his words now need to be backed up by Levy this summer. And if those players do go, replacements need to come in. And then on top of that, the squad needs to be improved. Because otherwise, how are Spurs going to compete with City and United and domestically and the likes of, you know, Juve and the established old guard in Europe?
And who knows what's going to happen at Chelsea and Arsenal as well, two teams that currently we're above in that top six, the only two teams in the top six we're above, who are going to go through radical change in the summer and expect immediate results as well, aren't they?
And also, let's be honest here, Poch is a really ambitious manager and he's not going to want to earn himself a reputation as a nearly manager. He's not going to want to spend another 3 or 4 or 5 years nearly winning stuff and playing great football but having nothing on the CV to show for it, because then, you know, ultimately a bigger club is not going to say Pochettino's our man. He's going to have a reputation as a manager that constantly falls short. So yeah, he is the best thing that's happened to Spurs in maybe my lifetime. Maybe that's a bit extreme, but certainly I think in the last kind of 20 years. And I think he does know that maybe they've reached a point where something needs to change or this is going to keep happening.
Yeah. I don't like using the word blame, because at the end of the day, it was a semi-final in which we could have won that, but we do have to recognise this is an experienced 11 we were facing, an experienced club, an experienced manager, who have got match winners. All right, you wouldn't expect it to come from Ander Herrera, but they've got match winners in that side. And it was a semi-final. It was neutral. It was a neutral ground. And it's not a ground we're famously brilliant at. We've been all right in the league, but that's the league. You know, you end up facing dross in the league. You don't tend to in cup competition. So, last week we were talking about the selection headaches, if you like, Vorm over Lloris and Sanchez or Toby and Lamella and Son, I think was the other one. And in the end, it was a bit of a mix and match, wasn't it? Because Toby didn't play, but Vorm did, and Son started as well. But can we read anything into that? Are we looking at it being purely down to, you know, if Lloris was in goal, we'd probably draw 1-1? Second goal is very, very poor, isn't it, from Vorm? Goes into the middle of the goal.
Yeah, I've been quite vocal about this on Twitter, so I will try and articulate what I think now. I don't think it's as simple as that. I think that's way too literal to just say, oh, if Lloris was in for Vorm, he would have saved the Herrera shot. Or if Alderweireld was in for Sanchez...
Yeah, not on current form.
Or if Alderweireld was in for Sanchez, he would have cut out Pogba's cross or whatever. I think it was probably a mistake not to go with Lloris and Alderweireld, but I don't think it was a mistake because they would literally have stopped those United goals. I think obviously there's a mentality issue with the team. I think that's pretty clear. Spurs have a problem getting over the hump when it really matters, when the pressure's on in cup competitions, especially. So I think the way to address that is to play players that have experience in elite cup competitions. That would be one way to help. And in Lloris, you've got a goalkeeper who's been to the final of Euro 2016, who captains France. For all his errors recently, he is a leader on and off the pitch, I think, or he wouldn't be club captain, he just wouldn't be. And, you know, he is a better goalkeeper than Vorm, who, you know, has done well enough. So I think that was possibly a mistake. I think it's important to say that I think Pochettino probably had no choice in that respect, because Vorm probably has something in his contract, or he's got a gentleman's agreement with the club to play in every round up to and including the semi-final of domestic cups. So probably Pochettino's hands were tied, but nonetheless, I think Lloris should have played. And then Alderweireld, similarly, he's a guy who's won La Liga, he's won 3 titles with Ajax. Sure, Sanchez has played in the Europa League final, we shouldn't forget that. But Alderweireld has also played in the Champions League final.
Yeah.
He's a more experienced player.
I agree. I mean, but that's another way of simplifying, isn't it? Of saying, you know, a guy that played in a Champions League final 4 years ago who's now struggling for fitness against Newport. You know, who was it? He had Rochdale. He had a real shocker against. And people, again, I think it was after we went out to Juve, people were saying that Toby in February, you know, considering his fitness since then, but people were looking at that and saying, if Toby was there, Higuain doesn't get that first equaliser and it doesn't all go to shit.
Yeah, I get that.
He's not the same footballer as this idea we have in our head now of Toby. He's fantastic. He will go on and he will almost certainly go somewhere and win a trophy next season.
He'll have one great season, won't he? He'll go somewhere and win someone.
And he will earn three times as much as he did in this season with Spurs.
Yeah, look, but I get that completely. It's not about, you know, literally the performances they would have put in on the pitch. I think
the message it sends?
Yeah, kind of the message, but also about the intangibles. I think what all the players have come out and said, including kind of Ali and I think Kane, have said, you know, when you play that type of team, and by that type of team they mean United and they mean, you know, winners, experienced players, players who kind of know how to close out a game, know how to win a high stakes, high pressure game. And you know, obviously for all Spurs talent, I don't think there are enough of those players, and I think Lloris and Alderweireld are sort of the closest thing, along with I think Vertonghen, you know, who won, who was just mainly brilliant on Saturday, by the way, along with Vertonghen and I suppose Dembele as well, who both won titles in Holland. They're kind of the closest thing Spurs have got to those type of players, and
that's fair.
For me, it's more about just the message and the kind of intangibles like leadership and experience, blah blah blah, that they would have brought to that occasion.
I think it's interesting that you mentioned Ali's interview, or what the words that Ali came out with afterwards, and I think it's been very painful the last couple of days, and done a lot of soul searching and stuff, which again I think is why when the dust settles, Poch knows where he's at and what this team is capable of and what the future holds for him and the team itself. But I think it's easy to read into these words and come to conclusions, but I thought it was really interesting Ali's interview with Spurs TV afterwards, and he said when you go behind to these teams, we know it's very difficult to overcome that. And I just thought, I think I tweeted it yesterday and just said, like, it's telling that we are not seen as one of those sides. We went a goal up and United didn't look at us and thinking, well, this is going to be tough. It wasn't easy. We're a good football inside. It was not a walk in the park for United. It wasn't like the old age of going 3-0 up at White Hart Lane at half time and losing 5-3 because we're a catastrophe. we are a good side, but we are not that side that people look at and think, if we go a goal down here, we're in trouble. I was having a chat with somebody before the game started and he said, this is going to come down to who scores first. And I think he said in the last 8 fixtures, it's all come down to who scored first in United's Spurs games. Didn't have time to check it out, but I don't think he's going to be far off. Certainly in the Pochettino years, if you like, that's been the case. And suddenly this time, that high pressure situation, we're in total control of it, and it all gets turned round on us. We are just not that team. And when United got in front, our reaction was very telling, considering United's reaction when we went in front, I thought. So again, it's very easy to read into stuff, but I just find a lot of this is sometimes what they say is letting on a little bit more than what they're actually saying.
Yeah, completely.
You know?
And as a journalist nowadays, I think sometimes you are kind of feeding on scraps, and you do have to look for kind of nuance and subtleties in what people say. And I saw the Ali interview, and I completely agree that there was. He was measured because they're all measured and very well media trained, but there was a lot of frustration and kind of anger in that interview, I think.
Yeah, huge missed opportunity. If we'd have lost 2-0, it was a missed opportunity, but to do what we did, and we did start well as well, didn't we? We had a ferocious 15 minutes. Trippier looked like he'd eaten
spinach.
Yeah, it's spinach, let's go with that. Beforehand, I mean, I think he put in something quite nasty on Sanchez within the first couple of minutes, but.
Did he? I missed that. I saw him. He megged Pogba, which got a lot of.
Yeah, no, Sanchez got past him with a spin and he raked his studs down his back. It was nasty, but he was just mad.
Yeah, I mean, and Kane, I think, left Matic and Herrera for dead in the first 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Just, you know, looked like.
Son really put him on the back foot as well. Yeah. It just didn't.
Yeah, I mean, and that's part of it. I mean, people say. people have said the Spurs genuinely bottled that game, and I know that's a phrase that's been thrown around really unfairly, but I think Jack Pitbrook wrote in the Independent, it's been unfairly thrown at Spurs, but this was a kind of genuine bottle job.
I totally agree.
And I got that. And it was a sort of two-sided bottle job in that, first of all, Spurs didn't kill off United when they were on top. They absolutely battered them and had them on the ropes for 25 minutes. Just couldn't get that second goal, and it was so wasteful. And then I suppose the other side of the bottle job was then kind of meekly squandering control, I would say. When United scored, it was the control completely went out of the game until the half time, and then the second half was just weird. Like, I thought Vertonghen did not put a foot wrong in the first half. He was brilliant. Like, he was mainly defending against Lukaku on the touchline nearest to where I was sitting, and he's just on such good form and he's such a good player. And then in the second half, he pushed over Lingard in the box for what was a stonewall penalty, by the way. And it was quite lucky that for Vertonghen anyway, that it wasn't given, because if United had won, I think, that way, then it would have been two scapegoats, Dembele and Vertonghen. So he was lucky to get away with that. But it was just weird how the most composed player on the team, the best player on the team on current form,
totally loses
just
it.
Suddenly did that. And I was like, what is... That was a real red flag for me. I was like, what is going on? Spurs suddenly, they've just lost the cool.
And think back to last week against City, when Davis kind of lost control as well. And Davis is gentle Ben, isn't he? I know he's more aggressive now, but there just seems to be a collective kind of losing it a bit. And I mean, I'm not gonna lie, I was absolutely steaming at the game. I was just absolutely smashed.
Okay.
Just
sort of, nothing more to say.
Not really. It's more that I was very sunstroked and very full of Jägermeister and real ale as well, which is not how you end a drinking session.
That's quite a curdly old combo.
It was a meal.
In your stomach.
It was a meal.
I wouldn't be mixing them.
No, I wouldn't. And a gin and tonic was in the middle as well, as a palate cleanser on the tube. It's quite nice, actually.
Sharpens you up. Takes the edge off.
It really did, actually, because it was, you know, when you go into the pub for we were in the pub for about 2.5 hours
sluggish.
In London Bridge, and you get sluggish and it's dark because we were over the back.
Yeah.
With TV screens and stuff, and you go out.
So how do you get sunstroke?
How
do you get sunstroke?
It took us a long time to walk from Belushi's to London Bridge. There was a good 10 of us, and it was slow.
Right.
We were outside the shop for a long time while they got gin and tonics. So, sorry, to pull it back around, I don't remember a lot about the game to be able to give any sort of nuanced tactical insight, which is not really anything new, to be perfectly honest, but I think it's less about tactics and it's less about the approach and stuff like that. We could have won that game, as simple as that. And I think that there were a huge amount of Spurs fans that were utterly convinced that we were going to do it. And I was included in that. I was so emotionally invested in us. This has to be the year that we do it. Has to be. Of course it is. You know, we played well in the semi last year and we lost 4-2. You can't get that unlucky twice. I mean, it's not luck, is it? But it's just... I think that's where it's come from. It's disappointing. There's been a lot of anger and frustration, but overall, everyone is just so disappointed. And we need to remember we've got 4 more games, and that's my biggest concern. It's how deflated are we as a fan base and as a team? And I'm really interested to see what happens against Watford. Terrified.
Yeah, I mean, likewise. And it doesn't help that Chelsea won their semi-final and we're buoyed by that. And it does feel like...
They could do us a favour. You never know. They've got one... They might look at it as one thing to aim for now. Conte might put all of his eggs into that.
I think Conte will be prioritising that because he'll want to go out with a big major trophy and
quite
say,
right.
I got 2 trophies in 2 years. You were wrong to sack me. And that would be good for his CV. But still, I haven't seen Chelsea's full running, but they've got Liverpool, which...
Yeah.
Which gives me some comfort. Yeah.
I mean, that's the amazing thing. We've got a run in that is Watford, Newcastle, West Brom and Leicester. By the time we play West Brom, they could have nothing to play for. I think they've only got one more chance. I think if Southampton or Stoke get anything out of one of their next games, they're gone. So we're looking at four teams with potentially absolutely nothing to play for, and we're still looking at Chelsea's fixtures going, oh, we need Liverpool to do us a favour there. Do you know what I mean? Tottenham. It's just so Tottenham, and it's so fucking exhausting, this football club. So exhausting.
I think one of the things about Saturday, though, that did strike me was the Spurs looked tired. I mean, obviously, a lot's been said about Kane, and I think the injury has contributed to that. He hasn't looked sharp since he came back, albeit he scored twice.
I'm pissed off about that, actually, Kane coming back so early. I'm quite annoyed at Poch and Kane about it. Way too early to come back.
Well, but who knows?
I know that he's got, and we should be seeing
the medical reports. I don't know if he did come back too early, but
then from what we've seen so far, you know, and also from what we know in the past, he's had three of these injuries, and each time he's come back and been rushed back a little bit. Do you remember last year against Arsenal? He scored the penalty, but we could barely walk by like 60, 70 minutes, and Son was around him doing all of his running. He did it. I think he came back and he didn't score for about. He scored like 3 in 10 or something like that. He's just sluggish. And I know we should applaud the reasons for him wanting to come back. He wants Golden Boot and he wants to help the team and he wants to score goals, and that's brilliant. And he's still scored against Brighton, you know, but we weren't doing awful without him. We didn't need to bring him on for 15 minutes against Chelsea. I'm not convinced we really needed to play him for the entire game against City. And it's just, you think he could have just been a bit...
I know what you mean.
It's frustrating.
It's another debate for probably another pod, but it sort of comes back to Llorente's uselessness, doesn't it? And there isn't
I disagree though. But the four that we have,
I don't think Son has proven himself the answer. I think he's had lots of opportunities for him to say, I am the unquestionable backup Harry Kane. You don't need to sign another striker. I think he blows hot and cold when he's up front.
I do agree.
And Kane, yeah. And then there's a kind of decent argument, a fairly compelling argument, that a sort of sluggish Kane is still better than anything else. But with Son on the wing. But I think, you know, I do think there was a collective sluggishness about the performance, and maybe it's just that United are a good team and do that to you, and City are a good team and do that to you. I don't know, but and now a full week off, you know, Watford's Monday night, so over a week off, and yeah, I hope they look fresher on Monday night, because I thought you know, I wondered if maybe a season on the big pitch that everyone talked about, you know, it is a lot bigger than White Hart Lane. Maybe that's just starting to take its toll, and the injuries to Wanyama and Lamella and Alderweireld that kind of have limited rotation in the squad.
Yeah.
It could be something to keep an eye on.
Fair. While we're on Harry Kane, he's had a bit of a bad weekend overall, really. Obviously the semi-final itself, but quite a lot of shit being flung his way, let's say, by more official bodies than perhaps is necessary. I'm sure he's used to the football Twitter lot. Not that I'm sure he doesn't read his mentions, but, you know, he can't tweet anything without some idiot hiding behind an anonymous account, rather, saying something stupid. But this wasn't anonymous accounts. This was the FA Cup official Twitter feed. There was a few people. So you broke a story, or you wrote a story earlier today.
I wrote a story, yeah.
Do you want to... Because basically, well, there's a few people that responded to the story that said they didn't know what the original tweet was.
The FA Cup Twitter account tweeted literally minutes after the final whistle a message saying, "What's in your pocket, Chris?" and a video of Chris Smalling saying, "Harry Kane." And it was up for... I think it was up for about a day. So I think it got deleted on Sunday, and it got well over... You've got tens of thousands of retweets. I think the only official number I've seen was about 20,000, but that was from a story on Saturday night, so it would have probably got more than 20,000. A lot of engagement, a lot of stick for Kane. And then the upshot of that is that the FA have written to Spurs and United and apologised for it, and I think both clubs were basically very, very unimpressed by it.
Is it the fact that it's just very unprofessional? Or the fact that it's come from an official account.
I mean, what do you think?
I think it's just another symptom of a perennially terribly managed organisation, which is the FA, making more and more mistakes like this. Like, I know it's this is a social media guy that's probably fresh out of uni or something, who's just made a tweet that I don't think the tweet itself is that bad. It's not offensive, anything in it. I think it's a bit, you know, if you're Harry Kane, you're probably like the last thing you need anyway, for it to come from your own FA, because it is it's a representative of it, isn't it? I just think you probably would be pissed off. I think the telling thing is that United have come to it as well and been like, we don't really want to be this again. Yeah. It's an association.
Yeah, I don't think United were happy either. Yeah, look, I mean, I think for me,
look, Kane is England's star player. There's a few, yeah, but he is their star player. Yeah, and he is their captain, doubt, isn't he? Is he officially captain?
Not the official captain, but okay, there's a good chance he will captain, you know, half the games, or, yeah, or maybe all the games at the World Cup. So this is he's it. One of the captains.
Think of other countries. I don't think there's a chance in hell that any official account linked to something official in their football association mugs off the captain. France wouldn't do it to Hugo Lloris. Wouldn't happen. It wouldn't happen.
Hugo would never like it.
Well, exactly, yeah. I mean,
Argentina aren't doing that to Messi. Yeah, it wouldn't happen.
And, all right, these players are more, let's say they've done more with their countries and stuff like that. That is true.
But that's irrelevant.
Yeah, it wouldn't happen. But I think you look at any country, Italy aren't even going. They wouldn't have done it to Buffon, that sort of thing. And I just think it stinks, basically. It just fucking stinks, and I hate it, and it does my head in, because it's just, we do nothing but break down our footballers. Harry Kane is a poster boy that England should be championing it, because they fucking lucked out with him, because if it wasn't for him, they'd be going to a World Cup with probably Danny Welbeck, Daniel Sturridge and Andy Carroll in there as well, as part of the squad. They lucked out with Harry Kane because of basically a foreign manager that came in and built him up to what he is now. That's Pochettino. His drive and his desire, his determination, his commitment to being a better footballer, not just making the best of what he is, because if that was the case, he would be a championship striker or lower Premier League striker. Everything about him has made him the best striker in Europe, one of the best strikers in the whole world. And England want to basically make him the butt of the joke that is already going round. You're always going to get that football Twitter corner that's going to take the piss out of anyone that is not part of their club.
Yeah.
And success breeds contempt. All right, we haven't had it in the form of silverware, but we have been successful with Harry Kane over the last 3 years. So you look at any reason to knock him down. An official body should not be doing that, particularly for somebody who represents everything that they are terrible at doing. They're not good enough at producing talent, and you've got a guy here who's made everything of his own talent off his own back through a system that doesn't work and has been shown not to work over 2 decades, possibly 3, and they're taking the piss, and it grinds my gears, Dan.
And I can tell you, I can tell you're pissed off.
It stinks.
Yeah, no, I think you're spot on, and I think in kind of defence of the FA, I spoke to some people at the FA today who weren't happy about that tweet and were furious at the time. So it's not as if the FA sat in their office before the game and gone, right, content strategy, lads, who can we mug off if Spurs lose? Harry Kane, as you said, it is a social media guy who has horribly misjudged the message. But I think the problem is he has felt emboldened to do that because of what happened with the Stoke goal, I think. Mm-hmm. The abuse Kane got has, I think, emboldened that social media guy, whoever he is, and I don't want to, you know, call for his head or anything. He's made a mistake. He's been emboldened because Kane's own England teammates, you know, Vardy and Henderson, have openly taken the piss.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Salah's openly taken the piss. Former players, Lineker, Shearer, have openly questioned the decision, if not taken the piss. All the fans, you know, have taken the piss. And the problem is, it suddenly created this environment where Kane Fair game. Yeah. Exactly. And you know, it annoys me. It's you know, I unashamedly love Ronaldo, and I almost always have. And you know, for so many years, he was painted as this kind of villain, and I refuse to accept anyone who says no, he's always been celebrated. No, he was the bad guy for like 5 years when he should have been celebrated and put on the top of a pedestal and said, you know, look at this as an example to every single footballer. And Kane's exactly the same. You know, he's not someone that deserves ridicule at all. You know, he only deserves adulation. And you know, if I was Southgate, and I'm not blaming him and the FA, you know, I'd have been straight on the phone to Henderson and Vardy and said, listen. You know, there's a lot of talk about marginal gains in football. You know, people say, you know, get every single edge you have. And I'd be saying, we do not want Harry Kane remotely irritated, even if it's just slightly annoyed, going into this World Cup, because he's the best hope we have. You know, that's what I'd be saying on Southgate. You know, shut your trap and just support it, even if you joke about it in private. And I don't think the reaction to that... Stoke goal has been good, and I admit when Eriksen scored against City, I tweeted goal Kane, but I felt like it was being ironic. Yeah, but I'm not one of his England teammates.
Yeah,
and look, I'm not an influencer. Well, I am an influencer, but I'm not a major influencer, shall we say? but look, yeah, I think it's a shame.
Look, two things on the back of that. Firstly, Kane is completely clean. There is nothing, there's not a single thing that you can point to about Kane that you can drag him through the mud for. The worst thing he's done is claim a goal that was questionably not his. That is literally the worst thing he's done in his career that people can pick up on. And that's why they've run with it. And that's why it's got to this ridiculous frenzy. I think the second point of this, and it's a bit broader, but... I think this is, again, to circle it back round to the FA and the Premier League, the fact that Henderson and Vardy, again, have felt emboldened to do that to a point is it's club football over international football. They've not done anything to think, this guy's my national captain, I'm going to have to play a few friendlies with him, you know, coming up. We're going to have to share a dressing room. There's no thought process about that. It's all cheap likes, cheap retweets. It's all numbers. It's a whole thing in this country based around football numbers. It's why Paddy Power and all of that have got huge waves of fans, because their social media is built around it. Vardy may not even have access. He might not even know the password to his Twitter account. But his social media guy does, and he knows what's going to get interaction, what's going to get me laughs, what's going to get me likes and retweets.
And just to jump on the back of that, one of the things I was told by someone who would know about one of the problems England had at Euro 2016 was tribalism.
So what, they would stay with their own club mates?
Yeah, I was told that it's not extreme, but it's, you can tell. The Tottenham players sit with the Tottenham players.
Yeah, good.
Liverpool
stay clean.
So, yeah, but
you're completely agree. But is that nothing as well? Like,
you don't get that. I mean, there were so many issues. I don't want to get into debate
about
England, but I think, yeah, this is a kind of minor example. It does seem a bit bonkers that Kane has got stick from his own international teammates. You know, he's been on the receiving end of jokes when Pochettino's, and you know, Kane's not going to come out and say, oh, I'm really upset by this. Please can everybody stop mentioning it.
Stop,
I'm really
mean.
Unhappy about it, and I just want to just, he's not going to come out and do that, is he? But Pochettino has said, you know, he was a bit disappointed by the reaction. It's just like, you know, first of all, it's not funny anymore. It was funny for about 12 hours, and I did enjoy it, the insanity of it.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think, yeah, there's just so much to say, but just in general.
Fuck off.
Yeah, just in general, it's symptomatic of wider problems, I think, in English football.
The PFA.
The media breaking people down. Yeah,
we haven't even mentioned the fact that the PFA... Who was it? Ben... What's his name?
It's Ben Perkis, who's the Cambridge defender.
Right, okay.
Who's the chairman of the PFA at the moment.
So he made a joke about it, about he scores goals he didn't even touch, or something stupid
like that.
Which, again, he's such fucking base joke. It's not even funny, but...
again,
fucking remember who you are. Do you know what I mean? Like who you represent and stuff. And it's going to get picked up. It's going to get widely reported. Kane's already had like two kicks in the bollocks this weekend. You really fucking need some Cambridge right back to say as well. I appreciate you're not allowed to comment on any of this, but in your professional capacity. You're not allowed to pile on in the same way I am.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not going to pile on old Ben Perkis. But I think,
fuck off.
But you know, I agree with you again. Like, it's, you know, last night, Kane came third in the PFA Player of the Year award. And he hasn't been as good as last season, probably. Well, in fact, maybe that's recency bias. He has been pretty good, hasn't he?
He has been very good.
But he didn't, you know, he came third and he came second in the Young Player Award. You know, last night. The problem is, you know, we risk having a sense of humour failure, but it wasn't a funny joke. And you know, last night was a time to celebrate another great season for Kane.
Yeah,
that's what it was about. You know, he's not won it. Yeah, Salah and De Bruyne have genuinely been better, and fair play to them. But it was still not a night for another pile on to England's captain. And to go back to marginal gains, as I said, like England. Everybody in this country who's an England supporter, it's in their best interests for Kane to be very happy.
And they are waiting
in the next few months. Yeah, and it feels like the opposite, doesn't
it? And again, that comes down to no one really having... It's tribalism again. You care more about your club than you do for your country. And you can't. It's a fact that fans of lower league clubs do invest more time in England. They do care more about England because they don't have that tribalism. They don't have that, well, I don't like him. I don't like Jamie Vardy and I don't like seeing him play for England. I've got no affection for it whatsoever. I don't have any affection for watching England, but I want to watch Spurs players play for him. And I look at it now and just think, what's the fucking point? It's like, just you're better off out of it. Dele Alli's at the start of his England career. What do you reckon he's going to get out of 10 years in the England team, which is what you'll probably get? Nothing. Probably nothing to win and nothing but haters out off the back of it. It just doesn't seem worth
it. Yeah, I agree with you. I do look at kind of Sterling and Alli sometimes, the stick they get. When the last international break, Alli played 28 minutes or something because he was a bit tired and he had a hamstring strain. And then the whole... national media made the two games into an Alli's place under threat story and Southgate unhappy with Alli stuff. And I was just like, you know what, I think he was eligible for Nigeria.
Okay.
For his dad, I think so. I need to check that. But it's like, mate, you know, go and play for them. Yeah. They'll absolutely love you.
Yeah.
Whatever you do, and rightly so.
Yeah.
You know, every single game... the whole national media will be celebrating having a Premier League star. Every single fan would adore you.
You'll win just as much.
Yeah.
You really will. You're probably playing as many World Cups as well.
Yeah, and obviously poor old Sterling, who just endlessly gets stick, no matter what he does.
And if he turned around tomorrow and said, I'm not doing it anymore, he'd be called a bottler. Or he'd be called, you know, our guy can't take it. It's exhausting. I think fuck them. I think they've made mistakes. I think you're right. There is a chance we can be looking at it and saying there's a sense of humour failure. My mind casts back to the Arsenal thing when Ozil posted that gif to the Spurs or to the journalists. Do you remember when he said he
didn't include him? It was the Arsenal Twitter account themselves.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yes, it was. Yeah,
GIF
right.
Of Ozil drinking tea.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, I don't think that was at all good form either.
No.
But people have got to remember. I mean. There are a million banter accounts on Twitter who no doubt, did and could do the Kane Smalling joke.
Yeah.
You know, footy accumulators or whatever, Odds Bible.
All verified.
You know, yeah, they can do it great and no one's going to be upset by that because if you like that kind of stuff, you follow it. If you don't like it, you don't follow it. But the FA and Arsenal are official spokespeople. They are representative of that whole body, and people, you know, Twitter isn't just banter. You know, the President of the United States tweets policy all the time, and it's brands trying to
be human, isn't it? That's the other thing. It's
a breaking news platform,
as
much as anything, as much as a social network, and I think people forget that. Everyone's saying, oh no, it's just a bit of banter. It's like, yes, there's plenty of room for banter on Twitter, and you know, genuinely, there's nothing I like more than you know, my favourite ever day, like literally, was when the David Cameron fucked a pig story.
We recorded a podcast that
day. Yeah, I'm saying. And I just spent the whole day on Twitter just enjoying the memes and the jokes. It was absolutely brilliant. Yeah. That Twitter is great for that, but it shouldn't become, you know, I'm not expecting like number 10 to tweet.
Yeah.
You know, we're not expecting, you know, Labour Party official to tweet, you know, a gif of Cameron on the phone with Peppa Pig, you know, saying they know. Exactly. So
there's ways and means of doing it. It's not your job to do it. Yeah, I agree. Let's move on. I mean, I think we've spent a really good amount of time on that. We've mentioned Watford. We've mentioned the fact that we do obviously need to bounce back. There is only 5 points between us and Chelsea. It could potentially be 2 by the time we play Watford, which we seem to have kind of ignored since we won at Stamford Bridge. And I feel like it's kind of like the football god only allowing us one nice thing. Like, you've won at Stamford Bridge, but you're fucking up 4th. So, you know, peaks and troughs, lads. But realistically, we should be still looking at both. West Brom, Newcastle, Leicester, all potential banana skins and have historically been banana skins for us for various different reasons. But Watford, you'd argue, would be, I'm not going to say the easiest, but let's say the most straightforward of them. It's reaction time, isn't it?
Yeah, and
to prove the season's not dead as well, and that we're all
it feels big on the back of
Keegan. We're still fighting for this.
I will love it.
Yeah,
it feels significant for those reasons. Watford are terrible on the road. I don't think they can be any higher than kind of the bottom 5 for away wins this season.
They're safe as well, aren't they?
They're more or less safe, I think. Them and Palace kind of very much shook hands on a 0-0 draw at the weekend. Yeah. Just like, right, we'll both have a point there. Thank you very much. Yeah, so it is reaction time. And on paper, it's very much the sort of most winnable game of the 4, I think. Even considering West Brom, just because, as you've said, there is a history there.
Yeah, they would love it. I think I mentioned to Trunk, Jack put a tweet out earlier and said something like, I have to admit, actually, I can't remember what the original thing was, but I remember saying like that we play more derby-level fixtures than anyone in the league. We're almost like the new Man United in that everyone kind of wants to beat us, but we haven't won anything. We've not won the league, and that's not why people want to beat us. People just seem to not like us very much. I think we've got 4 London derbies.
Do you think that's your perception? You and Jack's perception as a Spurs fan.
Well, Jack didn't say it, to be fair, it's me. But so you've got 4 London derbies. All right, Palace probably can give or take us. But we've got 3 very intense London derbies, Arsenal, Chelsea and West Ham. All would claim that they hate us the most, you'd say. Palace, Leicester definitely hate us and we hate them, you'd say. West Brom are in there as well, don't like us. Southampton, don't like us. Newcastle seems to have some beef with us, but I think that's mainly just banter at the 5-1, which again is fair enough. You know, there's and then you look at the 2 Manchester clubs who we're competing for top 4 all the time. Liverpool, so you're looking at over half the league are quite happy to really say Stoke don't like us. I mean, they don't like anyone, but Stoke.
But I think everyone's. I'm not sure I agree with this, but I know where you're going. But I think it's just because everyone in the Premier League, you know, are competitors by nature. That's why they're in the Premier League.
Each other,
and they hate each other. And then they've always got to find a narrative and a reason to want to win. And,
true.
You know, for Leicester, it's, you know, probably easy for the manager at the time to you know, fire them up and say, I remember that. I do agree on the Leicester front, actually. I do think that 2015-16 season kind of created something between the clubs, just because it was so publicly nice with Pochettino and Ranieri being, you know, so warm in to the media. But then I feel like behind the scenes that there was kind of real determination on both fronts to get one over the other.
And so, Spurs fans are incredibly bitter about it as well.
Oh, yeah.
It's not a criticism. Yeah. Absolutely right. You should be bitter about a team beating you to a title.
I mean, of all the seasons for Leicester to walk into, they walked into Tottenham season, didn't they?
Yeah. Cheers, lads. Okay, yeah, I have nothing to say on Watford.
I've not got much to say on Watford either.
Fair enough. Shall we finish on a listener question? Should we be... I like this. This is from... I'm really sorry if I've pronounced your name wrong, but Annalise Jesperson at Abyss Talks. Abyss Talks. Should we be worried by how much weight Poch has put on, as we know from his book that he comfort eats? It's a good question, actually. He didn't go for a suit on Saturday, which...
I did notice that, which surprised me.
It surprised me a little bit as well. I don't really know why. I mean, don't have to.
Yeah, I was going to tweet about it. I was going to Poch in full tracksuit. Mourinho was in kind of shirt sleeves and suit trousers.
Do you
trousers.
Remember a few years ago when when Stoke got to the FA Cup final against City? I think it was City's FA Cup first win. And Tony Pulis got there, and everyone was wondering about whether or not he'd wear a suit. And I think in the end he wore a suit with a baseball cap. In peak Pulis. But Poch does like to comfort eat, doesn't he? He likes to gorge on crisps and pizza. No salad.
I've never seen it, but according to his book, he does.
Is he starting to show a bit of paunch in...
I haven't noticed. It's a good spot.
It's the season unravelling down.
I haven't spotted it, if I'm
with
honest.
With each belt notch.
I haven't spotted it. Poch is, what I will say, which is completely off topic, but it's just a nice little anecdotal thing, but Poch has become very British in that he comments on the weather every every press conference. And like, comes in and goes, oh, it's very hot at the moment.
Has he always done that?
I haven't... Well, if it's like unseasonably warm, because I think the pre
Brighton, it must have been.
No, pre semi-final press was on the Thursday last week, which was the first really hot day we had, that kind of four nice days. So he came in and said it, and there was a bit of kind of like, oh, it will never last, Poch, don't worry. And if it's very cold, he'll always say, oh, it's very chilly.
Quite like that. Don't know why. Minty Bloke at Minty Bloke on Twitter. This was a good question, I thought. I think it asks a wider question as well. Mourinho may not be popular, but he knows how to win. Do you think Mourinho would have been able to win something with this squad of Spurs players? Let's say Mourinho's taking charge of the first 11 that went out there on Saturday for Spurs, and he's been there all season. Do you reckon we win that game? It's a good question, isn't it?
It's a good question, yeah.
Because you said in the lead-up about you think Spurs can beat United, but you don't believe Poch can beat Mourinho. Or
I said I back... When the draw was made, I said... I back Spurs to beat United, but I back Mourinho to beat Pochettino in an FA Cup semi-final.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why you should follow me on Twitter.
For betting tips.
Yeah, I think... I mean, it's such a what-if, isn't it?
So let me ask you a different question. Do you think Spurs fans would be happy with Mourinho as manager? Say he followed Pochettino for some bizarre...
Yeah.
You know, next year, United finish fifth with Mourinho and he leaves. Pochettino takes us to fourth or third. Real Madrid come calling and he's gone. And then Mourinho is available. And we went for him. So we still haven't won anything under Poch. I mean, it's sacrificing your style for substance, isn't it? That's what you get with Mourinho. How do you think he'd be received at Spurs?
I think he'd probably be well received at Spurs.
Do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think Mourinho is a guy who... It's easy to loathe him, but when he's kind of fighting your corner, you do get on board with him.
A bit like Ali, in a way. If he plays for you, you love it, but if he plays against you, you hate him.
Yeah, I think the difference there is I think Dele Alli's a genuinely nice lad who's been kind of miscast as this pantomime villain, whereas I think Mourinho is probably a bit of a scumbag. Almost definitely a bit of a major scumbag.
Okay.
But I think Mourinho would win something with the Spurs team. And I think if... I don't want to do Poch down, because I think he's great in so many ways. But I do think if Mourinho had been managing Spurs in the last two FA Cup semi-finals, he'd have found a way to win them, or at least win one of them. Because he just knows how to get it done, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And I think as soon as it was 2-1 on Saturday,
that was it.
I had no optimism really that Spurs were going to score.
And right, so it was nothing.
I had more faith that United would score a third on the break, as it nearly proved with Rashford. I think he would, and I think Spurs fans. The thing about Mourinho is it kind of doesn't really. You don't have to put up with him for long. It is kind of like a 2 or 3 year thing. It's a kind of bed in, motivate, win, bust. So I think by the time Spurs fans are starting to get fed up with the football, he'd probably be already gone. So
yeah, I think it would be interesting if he didn't win something within his first season. It would.
He
always, really
he usually
would
takes
be.
A season, doesn't he, though?
Yeah, but he still wins something in his first season. He's done it at every club. He wins something.
He usually wins
the League
Cup. Yeah.
But that's
yeah.
And we've mentioned that many times before when we've had the discussion about Poch. Something we didn't mention, it's the last 5 minutes, no one listens to this, yeah. But something we didn't mention. In the league, we've gone ahead 22 times and we haven't lost a fixture when we've gone ahead this season. In each of the cup competitions, we've gone ahead and gone out in our final game. So we went ahead against Juventus in the tie, 3-2, when Son scored, went out. 2-0 up against West Ham in the League Cup, went out 3-2. 1-0 up against United, went out 2-1. Poch does favour the league. He does prefer almost a project. The league is almost like a microcosm of it. It's a project. If you get a setback, you would bounce back next week. In the Cup, you can't bounce back. You do not have that option to bounce back. So, is this just a Poch? Is this just a sort of one of those mentalities of something that's so ingrained in the club now with Pochettino that the long term is always better than the short term, and perhaps we don't quite recognise the significance of that in a way? You know, approach a game, a semi-final, you go ahead, it just feels like,
yeah, I get what you're saying. I mean, sort of reluctant to say like, oh, the Spurs bottle cup competitions when it's all or nothing, because they're always sort of different factors for every game, and I don't think Spurs really cared about the League Cup, for instance, very much. But yeah, that stat certainly kind of suggests that there is maybe it just goes back to what we were saying, maybe a mentality issue. And at the beginning of the season, I remember Ben Davis coming out and saying about Wembley that Spurs just need to be a bit more street smart and savvy and kind of see out games and, you know, stop trying to maybe go for a second goal when it was 1-0, for instance. I can't remember after which game he said that. It might have been one of the draws at Wembley, Swansea or Burnley,
yeah,
or West Ham or something like that. And you know, it feels true of the Cups, and you know, maybe it's about Poch just having more of a plan B in these games. And you know, you can't just go out and play exactly the same way as you play in the league, because it is a different type of game. And there's lots going into it, but yeah, I think that's quite telling. I don't think it's irrelevant. There's clearly an issue there.
We'll see.
I don't know.
We'll see.
That question at all, but
very deflating, but it has been cathartic.
Good.
Doing it. I think it does help. It puts a lot of stuff in context
as
well.
Get the poison out.
It does a bit. Yeah. It's sort of when you squeeze a gnat bite a little bit. No.
Why not? Yeah, I get it.
Just not very nice.
Metaphor, it's just a bit of a gross one, wasn't it?
Was a bit. Thanks for listening. And good night. Cheers. Bye.